Every day in America, 60 million packages are delivered. But we don't always know what's inside.
He bent down to pick the package up. That's when the device detonated.
Danger is everywhere, and no one is safe in Austin, Texas, as law enforcement hunts a serial bomber for 19 days. From Sony Music Entertainment, Campside Media, and Pegalo Pictures, this is Witnessed. 19 Days. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to binge all episodes or listen weekly wherever you get your podcasts.
College freshman Damien Hurd has been missing for 4 days. In that time, conflicting stories have emerged, including evidence that someone signed Damien into his classes and used his meal card in the cafeteria. But when Damien's body is discovered on a frozen cliffside, the investigation is just beginning. What happened to Damien Hurd, and who, if anyone, is responsible? From Cold Case Productions, this is Final Days on Earth, The Life and Death of Damien Hurd. Episode 4, Body of Evidence. I'm your host, Claire Sanima. Thanks for listening. Before we get started, just a brief note that this episode contains graphic descriptions from the scene of Damien's death. Listener discretion is advised. It's just after 10 a.m. on Wednesday, April 2nd, 2014, and detectives from the Gunnison Police Department are in full investigation mode. Damien Hurd, a freshman wrestler at Western State Colorado University, is officially a missing person after disappearing from an off-campus party hosted by his teammates. Detectives have worked through the night, putting out a description of Damien's car to authorities in Colorado and surrounding states, speaking with Damien's father.
I 100% knew that something was wrong.
His wrestling teammates.
I mean, he only hangs out with really wrestlers.
And his ex-girlfriend.
Well, I knew he could be a bit dramatic, and I just thought, you know, maybe he just ran off to be alone.
Through their interviews, police learned that Damien got into multiple physical altercations in the hours before he went missing, and that around 1:30 a.m., Damien left the wrestler's house on foot, picked up his Saturn SUV from the dorm parking lot, and used his debit card at a nearby gas station. In fact, before police can even view the surveillance video of Damien at the pump, they receive a call on the radio. A sheriff's deputy has spotted Damien's car 8 miles east of Gunnison, at the Cabin Creek turnoff.
As much as I hate to say this, I had an overwhelming feeling that Damien just wasn't with us anymore.
Officers arrive on scene and locate Damien's black Saturn SUV parked outside a closed metal gate at the entrance to Cabin Creek on Bureau of Land Management Road 3107. The car is locked, and the hood is cold to the touch, indicating the engine has been off for some time. When the police peer inside the window, they notice two things. The driver's seat is reclined, and there's something on the passenger seat. It's a disassembled cell phone, with the battery removed, lying next to a blue bandana.
The car, in my opinion, had been ransacked, completely and utterly in disarray, unlike any way Damien has ever kept his car.
After walking around the unoccupied car, the officer turns his attention up the hill, to a rock point. He makes his way through the sagebrush trail until something stops him in his tracks. A body is hanging from a limb on a juniper tree. Damien Kane Hurd is dead at the age of 20.
A Fort Worth police officer showed up to my house. I knew they had found Damien, and I knew that they had found him dead. I just knew it.
The officer told Gary to call Josh Ash at the Gunnison Police Department, who is still on scene at Cabin Creek in Colorado.
He then told me they found Damien, they found his car, that they found Damien hanging, and that it was a suicide. So I tried to stay calm.
I'm sure it was hard.
It was. I think I was just maybe in disbelief. Claire, I was just not wanting to believe what it was that he just told me.
Damien's body was hanging from a crude slipknot tied to a small tree branch. He was wearing tan pants that were unbuttoned and unzipped, and a camouflage sweatshirt, size extra large, with the hood pulled up over his head. There was an orange and gray sleeping bag, partially unzipped and laying elevated a few feet off the ground, against a rock. Damien's body was also leaning against the same rock, and both his feet were touching the ground. His right shoe was untied.
The first time that I talked to Officer Ash after Damien's body was found, and he told me that the body was found, the vehicle was found, and that Damien had killed himself. And I immediately said, you know, no, Damien did not kill himself. Why would you say that? Of course, he mentioned the fact that he was found hanging. I can't remember verbatim what he said, but it was something to the effect of, well, when we find bodies like this, then it's generally, or always is, suicide.
When I look at Damien's case, the strongest point in the suicide column is unquestionably the manner of death. Hangings account for about 20% of suicides in the U.S., and are second only to self-inflicted gunshot wounds. Although it seems off-color to describe any hanging as nonviolent, the fact that Damien's feet are both touching the ground and his body is leaning against a rock puts the most likely cause of death as a slow asphyxiation, one where, presuming the victim was alive when he entered the noose, would have been a controlled process. This particular kind of hanging has been referred to by the name the choking game. It's perversely been described as a euphoric way to die, and it was popularized in the 2014 Lifetime movie by the same name.
I know a way to get a little boost to make you feel like you can do anything. Have you ever heard of the choking game?
In the so-called choking game, you are supposed to stop yourself before you die. But according to experts, many who try it are unable to pull up before losing consciousness. It can be considered an accidental death or a suicide. And according to the Centers for Disease Control, around 1,000 kids in the U.S. ages 10 to 19 die every year from playing the choking game. There's no evidence that Damien even knew about the choking game. Gunnison police detectives never asked anyone about it in their interviews, and I couldn't find any link on Damien's social media or cell phone activity to the game. But considering the popularity of the trend in 2014, it deserves mentioning as a possible theory. One thing everyone can agree on is that Damien's death was a stunning turn of events for a college freshman with so much promise. In Damien's last conversation with his boss and wrestling alum Scott Frazier, he was planning for the future.
We talked a little bit about, yeah, I'm going to get better. You know, next year I'll be a national champion for sure. That's my goal.
In your last conversation with him, he talked about being a national champion
next year was that he was going to be a national champion. At first, it had the thinking was like, God, there's no way he'd ever get this. Somebody else had to be involved. Out where he was, there's hardly ever anybody out there.
Gary was trying to process the unbelievable information coming in from Colorado.
I mean, I was in shock, but at the same time, my heart just fell as soon as they started mentioning that it was suicide, and they really wasn't looking at anything else. So I started questioning, you know, what's up with the scene? Are you guys protecting the scene? Is it secure? What are you doing with the car?
One of the first things they noted in the report was that the driver's seat was reclined. What did you make of that?
I really don't know why it would have been reclined back, other than for a bigger person to drive the vehicle. Damien was not a very big person at all. You know, he never rode around with the seat reclined back.
Police photos from the scene were taken through the glass, and they painted a chaotic picture.
Just about everybody that knew him knew that he was meticulous about the inside of his car.
Damien's father said his son usually kept his car pretty tidy, a detail that was confirmed by wrestlers, including Devin Zavala.
Does he keep it clean?
Oh, yeah. Usually. During winter, it got rough for him, but usually he keeps it pretty decently clean.
But when police found Damien's car on this day, it was anything but. There are items all over the place, covering every seat, except on the driver's side. And at least one of those items appeared to have been tampered with. It was a ready-to-mail package that Damien had sealed and addressed to his childhood friend, Destiny LeHue.
He had wrote her a very encouraging letter and had also bought her a LeBron James T-shirt that was one of her favorite basketball players. And he had it packaged along with the letter already addressed to her. And that package had been opened, and the T-shirt was gone. At some point, somebody opened up that package and took the T-shirt out of it and stole it. And there'd have been no reason for Damien to have done that. He's the one that bought her the shirt. He had it already addressed to her and had just not mailed it yet.
Gosh, just when I think I can't learn anything new here.
I don't think I realized or remembered that it had been opened and the shirt had been stolen, but the rest of the contents were left. That's very... if they'd just taken the whole thing, we'd never know.
Destiny had joined the military after high school and had stayed in touch with Damien.
He was one of a couple people that I sent a letter to while I was going through boot camp. And he was like, yeah, you know, I'm going to send you a package. I promise. I never got anything. I actually didn't know about the package, of course, until after he was gone.
Damien's car was taken to an impound lot, where it could be processed for evidence. But before police could tow his car, they had to find Damien's keys. Just as his friend Devin Zavala had said, Damien had his Western State ID card attached to his car keys. Police reached into Damien's back pocket and found them both. They also located his wallet, which contained bank and insurance cards. There was no cash inside. As police turn on Damien's car for it to be towed, they note the windshield wipers are in the intermittent position, and the reading on the gas gauge indicates the tank is half full. While authorities continued processing the scene, Gunnison police officers Josh Ash and Detective Grace Cowan returned to City Market to watch the video of Damien pumping gas on March 30th. The $25.02 purchase corresponds with the half-tank reading on Damien's SUV, indicating he didn't drive far after leaving the service station at 1:36 a.m. In the video, he's wearing the very same clothes as he was when police found his body: tan pants, black tennis shoes, and an extra-large camouflage sweatshirt, which belonged to wrestler Andrew Morris. Considering the working police theory of the case is that Damien drove to Cabin Creek after pumping gas at 1:30 in the morning, in the pitch black and with a light freezing rain, it's also worth noting what wasn't found at the scene.
Is that still one of the biggest unanswered questions in this investigation? How did Damien even know that the Cabin Creek turnoff existed?
Correct. 100%. Not lit. There's no lighting whatsoever at all.
Besides the mystery of how Damien would have seen the Cabin Creek turn off at night, there's also the question of how he managed to travel outside the car.
And he didn't have his cell phone because it was disassembled on the seat. And
correct.
There wasn't a flashlight or anything found.
No light source. Correct.
So how could he have even seen this tree to know that it was there?
In my opinion, and it's just an opinion, you would have had to have known that it was there. Damien had no knowledge of that area, zero knowledge of that area. He didn't grow up there, he didn't know anything about that area.
The police theory of the case would have us believe that Damien hiked up an icy cliffside, in the dark, with untied shoes and unzipped pants, and fashioned a noose out of ice-cold jumper cables. He then located a suitable tree branch and hung himself, with nothing but the moonlight guiding his way. After police cut down the tree limb, Damien's body is sent to the Gunnison County coroner for an autopsy. His date of death is listed as April 2nd, when his body was found. The toxicology samples are collected on April 3rd at 1 p.m., 5 days after Damien went missing, and sent off to a lab for testing. Damien's autopsy notes the presence of small petechial hemorrhages around both eyes. Petechial hemorrhages are red dots that appear when blood vessels break open from an external stress, namely asphyxiation due to strangulation, hanging, or smothering. In Damien's neck, his hyoid bone is found intact. This small bone is located just below the chin, and its condition is often noted in autopsies. In about 30% of strangulation murders, the hyoid bone is fractured or broken. However, as a 20-year-old male, Damien's hyoid bone is unlikely to break in any kind of strangulation, whether homicide or suicide. Although several witnesses reported seeing Damien injure his hand in the days before he went missing, the autopsy report notes only superficial scrapes. An X-ray did not reveal any fractures or broken bones. After the initial autopsy in Colorado, Damien's family arranged for a second autopsy to be conducted in Texas. The discovery of Damien's body after the suspicious circumstances of his disappearance launched a wave of national and local media coverage.
The baffling death of a star college wrestler. At first, it appeared he took his own life, but his parents are speaking out now, saying they don't believe that's what happened.
These details of the young man's final hours are only adding to the mystery surrounding his death.
When the news hit Texas, Damien's friends were in disbelief, including his former wrestling partner, Bryce Bassinger.
They're just so absurd, the whole situation. Something isn't right, so... Then I heard about all the stipulations and what was truly happening, and I'm like, something bad happened. This isn't the true story.
Damien's high school coach, Chris Allen.
We were devastated. I don't know, hearing about what it was and kind of where he was found, you know, it's not right. I mean, I'm still really, I don't know if anger does it, but I'm still really pissed off to this day. Because anybody that knew him for even a short period of time knows, I mean, that it makes no sense.
At Gary Hurd's request, the Gunnison Police Department tested for fingerprints inside Damien's car. They took samples from the steering wheel, the door handle, and the gear shift.
And to your knowledge, were anyone else's fingerprints, you know, besides Damien's, ever taken as part of the investigation?
No, none. Nobody was fingerprinted, nobody was swabbed for DNA, nobody's phones were checked, nothing.
I mean, if they didn't even take anyone else's DNA or anyone else's fingerprints, how could they compare them to what was found?
They could not have.
We know from witness statements that Damien drove a group of wrestlers in his SUV to the Crab Feet fundraiser on Saturday afternoon. But according to Gunnison Police, they did not find a single identifiable print on Damien's car, not even one belonging to Damien. Police did note the existence of one latent fingerprint on the face of Damien's disassembled cell phone. It was sent off for testing with the Colorado Bureau of Investigation, also known as CBI. Multiple attempts to lift and test the cell phone fingerprint were unsuccessful. Other evidence collected at the scene included the tree branch that Damien was hanging from and the jumper cables around his neck. Both items were submitted for DNA testing with CBI and returned a mixture result, with Damien as one of the possible contributors.
And nobody else was tested. The only DNA that they had to test anything against was Damien.
Yeah, that's pretty convenient. If you only have one person's DNA and you match it to that, and then you just say the rest is unknown.
Correct. They were his items that were in his car. So if he's ever touched them or handled them in any way, then of course his DNA is going to be on them. I asked them, would anybody else be swabbed to test their DNA against the quote mixture unquote of DNA that CBI found? And I was told no, and that was by Detective Dana.
There was a flurry of activity at the Gunnison Police Department in the hours after Damien's body was found on April 2nd. In addition to conducting interviews and fielding tip calls from students and Gunnison residents, someone at the heart of the investigation walked right into the lobby of the police station and asked to speak to a detective.
It is April 2nd, 2014, 4:35 p.m., I'm in interview room number 2 at the Gunnison Police Department with Marlena Romero.
Marlena Romero is Damien's ex-girlfriend. She had recently started seeing cross-country runner Anthony Rios, and their relationship was the reason Damien started a fight with him at the wrestler's house party. This is not the first time Marlena spoke to police, but it is the first time the conversation was recorded. Here again is Detective Chris Danos.
So, you were telling me you were concerned about Damien?
Yeah. It might have been a suicide. I was just... The last time me and him actually really talked, he just seemed like... He seemed sad, and it was a lot of complaining. And he said the only thing that really helped was wrestling practice and stuff. And now the season's over, and I'm just concerned.
Marlena's voice is so soft, it's hard to hear at times. But she told Detective Danos that Damien's death, quote, might have been a suicide. According to written reports, Marlena spoke with police twice the day before, on April 1st, when Damien was still a missing person. In those conversations, there is no mention of suicide. But in this one, Marlena brings it up in the first minute.
I think it's just the whole pressures of college, finally being independent from family, and in a completely different state, too.
Even Detective Danos seems taken aback by her quick conclusion.
What made the transition there in your own head from that to suicide?
Because I used to be a bit suicidal, and I opened up to him.
Did he ever say anything specifically to you that would make you believe that he would take his own life?
Not really.
But you're concerned that he committed suicide?
Because, I mean, he was really heated that weekend and upset about me, I guess, and I don't know. Like, I already knew what was going on in his personal life, like with school and his family, so I just hope that it all didn't add up.
Marlena doesn't elaborate on what she says was going on with Damien's schoolwork and his family, and no one else who spoke to police referenced any such issues.
Any other thoughts or ideas on this?
No.
Do you have any questions for me?
None that could be answered yet.
You can ask.
I just want to know what happened. Like, why his body was found away from his car.
The reason I asked you that, because this whole time I've been sitting here talking with you, I wasn't sure you knew yet. You know we found him.
Yeah.
And you came today knowing we found him. Wanted to let us know that you think he took his own life?
Well, I learned that he was found, like, just a few hours ago. And I was just sitting in the multicultural center in the university center. And this guy's name's Chris
Lukengay?
Yeah.
Chris Lukengay was the vice president of student affairs at Western State. He was the person who told Gary Hurd that Damien attended classes and ate in the cafeteria on Monday. Apparently, he was also the person who told Marlena that her ex-boyfriend Damien had been found dead before the police did.
He came in and they were talking to me and...
They told you what was going on?
Yeah. Well, I guess they knew that I knew. And they were just like asking if I was okay, saying that there was going to be grief counseling tonight.
Did you know he was missing?
I was like, after class, I was just in my room on Facebook and I saw a status posted by one of the wrestlers, and I just thought it was like an April Fool's thing.
That was yesterday?
Yeah, and a few minutes later, my sweet mate knocks on my door and says there's an officer that wants to talk to me.
Oh, okay, so yeah, you talked with Officer Ash yesterday?
Yeah.
What was your first thoughts?
Well, I knew he could be a bit dramatic, and I just thought, you know, maybe he just ran off to be alone.
Had he ever done that before, ran off to be alone?
No, but he did talk to me about it.
What did he say?
He told me that, like, it was gorgeous out here, so if he needed to ever, like, get away or something, he was glad he was in Colorado to not be so in the dumps physically. So I just thought he was, you know, going somewhere quiet to cool down. I didn't know anything else.
The next day, in an April 3rd article in the Gunnison Country Times, Detective Danos said that foul play had not been ruled out, but no suspects were being pursued. This was 24 hours into the investigation of Damien's death, and before any autopsy or forensic testing had been completed. In the same article, Danos also revealed that Damien had been found away from his car on public land. A statement from the acting president of Western State ended the article saying, "The Gunnison Police Department has assured us that the circumstances surrounding Damien's death do not pose a danger to the campus community."
Even though police didn't list Damien's cause of death as suicide in their initial statement, they did say that they weren't pursuing any suspects. What did you make of that?
It didn't surprise me. It didn't surprise me at all that they weren't pursuing suspects. It was par for course from the very second I talked to Ash after the body was found.
The pain of Damien's death weighed especially heavy on wrestling captain Kyle Pyatt. Here he is talking to Detective Chris Danos 1 week after Damien's body was found.
I see you over any of the other guys really hurting about this. Now, I know you guys were a little close, maybe a little closer than the other guys. And you had this negative interaction with him before this happened. But that's some of the follow-up I really want to talk to you about. Because as I sit there and think about it, I'm not putting anything on you. Like I said before, whatever happened isn't on you guys.
Yeah.
Right? But yeah, it looks to me like you're holding a lot of guilt there. Am I right?
Yeah.
And what I'm asking is what I threw out to you guys in your living room. I don't know Damien at all. You guys know him a hell of a lot better than I do. And I don't know what happened in there at all. And for me to make sense of it, and me to get to the point where I can say, okay, here's what's going on, I need to know all those things. And you're being upfront and candid with me. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying you're not. But if there's anything else, as you're sitting there thinking that you said that you're thinking, oh, this is what's eating me up. You know, this stupid thing I said. Because we all say really ridiculous things at times.
Honestly, I just...
And what about Damien? Did Damien say something to you that you're sitting there thinking back going, I shouldn't have let that go. I should have said something or done something or...
No, it just sucks. Just that I had him up against the wall and just yelling at him. That was the last time I got to actually talk to him. And Damien wasn't a kid that I, like, when he would drink, he was never a kid that wanted to drive or do anything like that. And in my head, I think that, like, with our fight and everything, I think I might have been some of the reason he wanted to get out of town or something.
Did he ever mention that to you?
No.
As the interview winded down, Detective Danos turned the tables and asked Kyle if there were any questions he had for police.
Do you have any questions for me that I can answer?
Does it look like someone hurt him?
Am I interrogating you for a homicide?
Well, that's not what I'm asking.
I don't know. Anything's possible. I can't rule anything out. I apologize for the flippant remark.
It's fine.
If it was super clear-cut, I'd just be able to tell him, but it's not...
In interviews with Western State students, Detective Chris Danos tried to allay any fears. This is James Terry Pickard, one of the party attendees at the wrestling house, talking to police 3 weeks after Damien's body was found.
Will we publicly know what happened?
I don't have all the specifics. I have what information you and your classmates have been giving me, but I don't have any scientific stuff back yet. I don't have an autopsy result. I don't have any of that stuff to be able to tell you anything, but I can tell you that there's nothing about the circumstances of his death at this point in time that endangers any of you guys.
Without publicly using the word suicide, police sent a message that what happened to Damien was not a crime when they repeatedly stated that his death did not pose a danger to the community. The implication was that Damien died as a result of his own actions, and no one else was involved. Considering his close relationship with his son, Gary has a hard time believing Damien could have hid suicidal thoughts from him.
If Damien had problems to the point to where even for a split second, he would think, you know, it's just easier if I just checked out. There's zero doubt in my mind that he would have said something to me, number one. Bare minimum, I would have picked up on it. But there was never anything in any text or conversation between him and I that would ever lead me to believe that his mind was in any place other than his normal place.
Yeah.
And I truly believe that if Damien would have been having issues for any reason and was thought about hurting himself or checking out or anything like that, he absolutely would have said something to me. Absolutely 100% would have said something to me.
In the 47 interviews police conducted in this case, there was one person who claimed that Damien had suicidal thoughts. Western student Tori Boyle, the same person who happened to be the last dialed number off of Damien's phone. Tori spoke to Detective Chris Danos 2 weeks after Damien's body was found. He references an unrecorded conversation as the basis for his understanding that Damien had previously revealed suicidal thoughts to Tori.
You shared with me in our previous conversation that on two separate occasions, you had talked Damien out of hurting himself,
mm-hmm.
out of ending his life.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Tori tells Detective Danos that both occasions occurred around Christmas break, when Damien stayed in Gunnison over the holiday.
And you'd also told me that he stayed in Gunnison over Christmas break?
Yes.
Do you know where he stayed at over Christmas break?
I'm almost positive he stayed with Kyle Pyatt and all of
them. Okay, so he stayed at the wrestling house
yeah.
over Christmas break. But he didn't go back to Texas?
No.
The idea that Damien would have stayed in Colorado for the Christmas holidays, when he was so close with his family in Texas, struck me as odd. So I asked Gary about it.
In fact, he did come home to visit everybody. He was home for over 9 days.
Tori said Damien was at a party at the wrestler's house around Christmas time when he confided in her. But that was about as specific as she could get.
What did he say?
He just said that, just like, I don't know, like the normal stuff that somebody would say when they're about to commit suicide. Like, He said that he knew he had a purpose here, but he didn't know, like, what direction he was going in. Like, he felt like he had no future.
Okay.
Damien's father, Gary, viewed Tori Boyle's statement with surprise and suspicion.
When I read what she had said that surrounded that conversation that she supposedly had with Damien, nothing added up at all. I don't know why she was lying. But it's obvious that she absolutely was lying because she said that one of the times Damien had spoken to her about taking his own life was Christmas 2013. She said that he was really depressed coming up on Christmas time that he wasn't going to get to come home to visit his family. His plane ticket to come home was bought in October. Absolutely, Damien wouldn't have been depressed about not getting to come home because he knew he was coming home.
Tori never told anyone about this disturbing conversation she says she had with Damien until after his death. And when Detective Danos asked Tori how Damien seemed on Saturday night, March 29th, Tori said Damien seemed happy, and their conversation didn't raise any alarm bells.
And it was my understanding you got over there around 1:15 a.m.?
Yeah.
And Damien was in Andrew's bedroom. Morris's bedroom by himself.
Mm-hmm.
Under a blanket on the floor.
Yeah.
Okay. And you talked with him.
Yeah.
And he smiled at you because he enjoyed seeing you.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, it was my memory, you even asked him, are you okay? And he said yes.
Yeah.
At that time, why'd you ask him if he was okay?
Just to see if he wasn't, you know, like so drunk he couldn't get himself home or...
Okay.
Just being a friend.
Okay. Was there anything else that you were concerned about him at that time that you would ask him if he was okay?
No.
If Damien was suicidal that night, why wouldn't he tell the one person he had previously disclosed that information to? Or could it be that was why he called Tori Boyle over to the house that night? But for some reason, he lost his nerve and didn't bring it up. Damien's story is definitely one of contradictions, and Tori Boyle's statement adds to the growing debate about the cause of Damien's death. Damien's high school coach, Chris Allen, doesn't believe the wrestler would have committed suicide, ever.
There's very few things that you can be, you know, 100% sure of, and I don't know, I'm 100% sure. I mean, that there's no way he would have done that himself. I know what it's like being a college athlete, things of that nature, the hazing and everything else, and how everybody was so bone silent.
For the simple fact that Damien's body was found hanging from a tree, I can't blame the Gunnison police for believing that the wrestler committed suicide. And Tori Boyle's statement bolstered their theory. But if there's one thing I've learned from studying Damien's case, it's that things are rarely as simple as they seem. Just when you think you've got it all figured out, a new piece of information surfaces.
They had a witness that put Damien's body there on scene Sunday.
On the next episode of Final Days on Earth, the life and death of Damien Hurd. A tipster calls Gunnison Police Department with surprising new information, and a chilling story of a hike in Cabin Creek 3 days before Damien's body was found.
Parked the car at the entrance to the Cabin Creek Trail. I had been, noticing the tracks on the snow of the two bikes, and so it looked like they went in there that morning ahead of me. I tried not to stare over there because I thought they were watching me. That's what it seemed like, as they were both looking in my direction.
Final Days on Earth is recorded in Dallas, Texas for Cold Case Productions in partnership with Podcast One and Live by Live. Each episode is written, reported, and produced by me, Claire Sanima. Original theme music composed and performed by Riley Simmons. Songs licensed from PremiumBeat.com are Bending Truth and A Thin Line. Editorial consultant is Lucy Scott of LucyMedia.com. Additional production help from Amber Robinson, Janice Sue, and Elise Weber. Executive producers are Sharon Richards and me, Claire Sanimal. Special thanks to Gary Hurd, Scott Frazier, Destiny LeHue, Bryce Bassinger, and Chris Allen for talking to me in this episode. Tune in next week as we continue our search to understand what happened to Damien Hurd and who, if anyone, is responsible.
Every day in America, 60 million packages are delivered. But we don't always know what's inside.
He bent down to pick the package up. That's when the device detonated.
Danger is everywhere, and no one is safe in Austin, Texas, as law enforcement hunts a serial bomber for 19 days. From Sony Music Entertainment, Campside Media, and Pegalo Pictures, this is Witnessed. 19 Days. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to binge all episodes or listen weekly wherever you get your podcasts.